Giant Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
We're back to that, Rick. You're first again.
Yes, I'm first again.
I guess it didn't work.
No, it didn't. Because you know, hey, I got peeps out there. I got fans. People know me.
You won the election, darn you! Next time, everybody. I'm calling people. Okay, you go ahead. Introduce yourself.
I'm sorry. No, I was just gonna say, hey, everybody, welcome to another show of Paranormal Underground Radio. I am here with Karen Frazier. Karen Frazier and I am Rick Hale, and we are the future king and queen of paranormal talk radio.
Yes. Woohoo! Yes. Now, did Josh Gates name us that?
No, he didn't. But we were talking about this before we came on the air. It was pretty funny watching the Ghost Hunters live, and you know, Josh Gates said that Grant and Big Daddy Hawes were the godfathers of paranormal investigation. Even my unborn son couldn't help but laugh at that.
See, now, if I had heard that, I would have just been doing a little James Brown around my living room. It would have been okay.
The Godfathers. I always thought that was Frank Podmore and you know, the other guys who founded the SPR, but apparently I'm wrong, so.
Well, you know, it's a moving target.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's so, right. How's it going? Did you have a good Halloween?
Actually, I had a really good Halloween. It was pretty decent. But that's right. You don't like Halloween too much.
We hardly knew it was Halloween. We don't get trick or treaters at our house.
Oh, you really don't?
We live up in the woods, and nobody will walk up our long and creepy driveway. I think that people probably think we live in a haunted house. Well, we do, but yeah.
That's actually very cool. So, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the blog that you wrote. Let's talk. Would that be okay?
Okay.
Okay. So anyways, we're going to get a little bit off the subject here because Karen wrote a great blog called Let's Talk on the website, and I thought it was very fitting for our time. And, you know,
thank
Karen,
you. I said, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It was very fitting because right now, not a day goes by where you don't turn on the news and you hear about, you know, some poor, you know, guy or girl who happens to be gay, and they, you know, wind up killing themselves because people are giving them a hard time about doing that. So I really hope that nobody here does that, and let's move on.
Hey.
So that's, I just kind of wanted to touch on that for a minute.
All righty. So we have a new puppy.
You do?
Yes. But we haven't replaced. We made room in our lives because, of course, as you know, our other precious little peanut puppy was eaten by a cougar. So we made room in our lives, and we got a little Brussels Griffon. And if you don't know what a Brussels Griffon is, all you have to do is watch Star Wars and look at the Ewoks, because they designed the Ewoks after the Brussels Griffons.
Is that right?
Yeah. So he's really cute. His name is Mickey, which, I don't know, I keep wanting to call him Teddy, but Tanner named him. So, you know, Tanner spotted him across the room, and it was boy meets dog, love at first sight.
Aww.
So we have another dog, and even better news, our stinking cat is not knocked up.
Excellent. Oh, so yeah, so you won't be having like 15 little kittens running around the house?
I wasn't going to. I was going to drop him off at Bert and Jamie's house.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was just going to drop the pregnant cat off in their garage. They've got a few cats running around. They wouldn't have noticed.
Lucky you, Bert and Jamie.
I know. So the other thing that I've been doing on the blog this week is I actually posted a 3-part video series about Wellington, about our investigation up at Wellington in the last couple of years with us and NWPIA. And it's in 3 parts. It's the history, the haunting, and then a little wrap-up part. So if you go to paranormalunderground.net and you click in the gallery, you should be able to see those 3 parts. So wanted to mention that because that's pretty cool. And big plans this weekend.
And that would be?
Tanner and I have been invited to go down to St. Helens, Oregon, and go on an investigation with West Coast Ghost Hunters.
Nice.
Yeah. And John John Collins from West Coast Ghost Hunters is actually going to be our guest next week.
Oh, okay, cool. I like his name. It sounds like a drink.
John Collins?
Yeah.
I guess it's better than John Thomas. Do you know that that's my dad's name is John Thomas?
John Thomas? Oh, okay.
Yeah, isn't that a name for a, you know, a thing? A schlong?
For a penis? Yes,
I yes, believe. Yes, I believe it is a penis name. I think, though, however, that my father is in his 70s. My guess is he was named John Thomas. Mm-hmm. It probably was not. So maybe they named it after him. I don't know.
Okay. So what do we got going on the show tonight, Karen?
We're going to be talking about cryptozoology. And this is actually somebody that is a guest that you brought to Paranormal Underground. You have interviewed him, right?
Yeah, I interviewed him. I don't remember which one that was. I probably should have looked that up because I'm looking like an idiot right now. But yeah, we're going to be talking to Ken Gerhard tonight, the Monster Hunter. You know, whenever I watch episodes of Monster Quest and listen to this guy's music, I always think that he's kind of the would be the product of an illicit love affair between Indiana Jones and one of Count Dracula's brides.
Is that a compliment?
That is a compliment, yeah.
Because I see him. I actually see him in the chat room right now. And if he heard you say that, is he going to still come on or care?
I don't know. Let's wait and see. Ken, is that okay, buddy?
Well, I think it's appropriate because I actually sent you a link to the guy. There's a guy right now who's a fraud investigator. Former fraud investigator who claims that he captured thermal footage of Bigfoot. And I know you haven't been able to access that yet. Maybe hopefully during one of the breaks, you'll be able to take a look at it. Timing's appropriate. I want to ask Ken about that because the guy claims that he lured Bigfoot with candy. Now, I'm not sure that he didn't just catch me on thermal footage, frankly.
Are you 7 feet tall, Karen?
Well, maybe I have it on still. There are days I feel 7 feet tall. That's for sure. That's right. So, Cheryl, are you in the house, Cheryl?
I'm in the house.
All right. So I hear a rumor that you were going to leave Rick and I alone tonight for a few minutes.
Yeah, you know, I never would have told you except that you might have been calling for me and I wouldn't have been there. So I had to tell you, I'm leaving for 10 minutes. I'm leaving you guys alone. I'm afraid. I'm very afraid.
What do you think we're going to do?
You should be.
All sorts of naughtiness, I'm sure of it.
Oh, wait a minute. That means nobody will be manning the dump button tonight.
No. Well,
yes! Any words you've been wanting to say on the air?
Oh my God, you have no idea.
One of them we were told specifically we can't say and we'll get kicked off the air for it. So, you know, as long as we don't have Zach Bagans on, or if we do, we have the dump button, we're good.
Exactly.
And that would be the F word, and that's not Fruitopia, so.
Yes.
Yeah, so I won't know what you guys say until way after the fact, so.
Way after. What'll happen is as soon as we go off the air, she's going to listen to that 10 minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the truth.
Well, you know, my husband warned me. He said, you know, I just hope you know that after everything you did to Rick last week, that paybacks are a bitch. And I said, well, you know, Rick wouldn't do that.
No.
Oh,
not
no,
Rick.
No. Oh, you know what? No, because I'm gonna save it. I'm gonna save
oh, boy.
It when you least
you're in expect trouble, Karen.
It. When you least expect it, you are in so much trouble. But no, that was completely brilliant. The Mrs. Jamie, she thought that was hilarious too. So.
Well, and you know, you asked me last week who did our announcing, and of course that's a Techie McScience Geek's voice. That's my husband who does the voiceovers. He's really good at sarcastic voiceovers and stuff. He did a really good job. I have to tell you, as we sat here and tried to do that political attack ad, it took several takes because we kept laughing at what we were doing. We thought we were way funnier than, you know, everybody else did, probably.
No, I thought it was great. Oh, hey, Cheryl, by the way, NWPIA is naked.
I just saw that.
guess what I'm wearing?
a towel.
Guess what Karen's wearing?
A towel.
That is incorrect.
Darn.
No guesses?
A snuggie.
Pajama jeans, dude.
Oh.
You're wearing what?
Pajama jeans.
Oh, I thought you said mom jeans.
No, well, come on. Pajama jeans are probably the exact same thing as mom jeans. I actually don't have any, but I am so tempted to get them because, you know, mm-hmm. I work from home. And so my commute is basically out my bedroom door and down the hall, and then I plop down with my laptop and about four dogs on me. Mm-hmm. And the thought of sitting around feeling like I was in my pajamas all day but actually looking like I'd bothered to get dressed would be... I don't know. What do you think, Cheryl? Does that not sound ideal?
It does. It does, yes.
I wish I could work from home. I'd be naked all the time.
Oh, look at that. God's Enemy Fever thought I was wearing a pink Snuggie, and I got to tell you, I have one. That's what I got for my birthday last year, some pink Snuggies.
So. My dog has a Snuggie. It's so cute.
Oh, I've seen the little dog Snuggies. I think that my dogs would probably just chew them up.
No, she loves the thing. We put it on her every year. She got it for Christmas last year.
What kind of dog is your dog?
Jack Russell Terrier.
That's right. Is she a typical Jack Russell Terrier?
Typical Jack Russell Terrier. Never shuts up. Loyal. Will fight anybody and anything.
Right. We have a Toy Fox Terrier who is a lot like that. He even looks a little bit like a Jack Russell Terrier, except that he's about the size of a football.
Yeah. No, she's... Yep, she's about 15 pounds. She's just actually, I think she's an Irish Jack, so she's got a little bit more color on her, and her legs are longer, so.
Oh, I didn't know that there was a difference, I guess.
Yep, there is.
There you go. Okay, so let's go ahead and go to break, come back with Ken, and in the meantime, I'm going to go get my pink Snuggie and put on some pajama jeans, and we'll be right back.
See ya.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Did you know that you can talk to your favorite show hosts from the ZTalk Radio Network? Check out the forum and see what it's all about at ztalkradio.com.
Thank you.
Expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Is there more?
Hello?
On ZTalkRadio.com.
I thought we were going to get the monkey spank.
Sorry, gang. That was a bit rough. My bad. Sorry.
What is going on tonight?
You are live.
Oh, we entered the twilight zone. Well, Beth, I'm going to let you introduce our guest because you won the election. So you go.
I did win the election. Yes, I am the future king of Paranormal Talk Radio. Anyways, tonight, guys, ladies and germs, we have with us Ken Gerhard, the cryptozoologist and the monster hunter. You have seen him on several episodes of Monster Quest, which, by the way, Ken, I love that show. And he is the author of such books as Texas Monsters, as well as Big Bird. How you doing, Ken?
Good evening, Rick and Karen. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks
oh,
for
glad to
on
have
show,
you.
Ken. Thank you very much. You know, Ken, the first question that I would like to ask you, and I think is the question on everybody else's mind, are you wearing the hat tonight?
Am I wearing? Well, yeah, I never take it off, Rick. I sleep with it on. You know that, brother. I've actually had it surgically attached to my skull, to my hair follicles. So
there you go. And if it was comfortable like pajama jeans, you're set. You just need to get yourself a pair of pajama jeans, and it's all good.
There you go. Well, you know, a lot of people have tried to steal it, so that's why I had to take some extra precautions. People will just run up and try to grab it off my head and make off with it. So.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this Bigfoot footage that I was just talking about a few minutes ago here. This is a guy in North Carolina, and he claims he lured Bigfoot with some candy, and he got some thermal footage of something big and warm. So what do you know about this?
Well, yeah, I've looked at the footage. It is interesting. Now, keep in mind, I'm not the biggest proponent or fan of photographic evidence, really, for any of these types of unexplained phenomenon, just because it's, you know, it's really so subjective, unless it's something that's just going to shock the world. And, of course, we're always dealing with extraordinary claims, so those require extraordinary evidence. But that being said, you know, considering how many really bad faked Bigfoot videos there are floating around on YouTube and so forth, I think the guy's got a pretty strong case in terms of, you know, he's using a thermal camera, so it is heat signature. It's not a typical type of video camera. Right. So it's you know, it's essentially the image that you're seeing is an image of heat that's being put off by something. And, you know, in the footage, you see something very large kind of slink into view. It reaches up and grabs some candy that he's laid out as bait, and then it kind of disappears from frame. And for a while, I think it's kind of standing behind a tree and peeking back and forth. Mm-hmm. Now, what we can tell from the footage is that the subject looks very robust, very full and large. It does have a somewhat of a, you know, primate type of shape to it, and it's certainly animated and appears to be somewhat hairy, too. Now, if this were a costume that someone were wearing, you certainly wouldn't get that type of heat signature. You would think that it would be somehow diffused. If someone were wearing a ghillie suit, and I think that's one of his defense arguments, was that, you know, you would have essentially just little stripy shades of heat that were leaking through the ghillie suit and so forth. So
right.
If it was a fake, it was very, very well done. I think the jury's still out at this point, as with other photographic evidence, including the Patterson film, which is, you know, very, you know, in-your-face sort of footage compared to, you know, most of these films that we see on the internet. So, and he is a, you know, seems to be, to have a good background in terms of, you know, his credentials and so forth. So he doesn't really seem like the kind of person that would necessarily have anything to gain by putting something like this out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. I've always been a real big believer in in Bigfoot. I will admit I am a believer. And the thing that always struck me as strange when it comes to mainstream scientists, when they say, oh no, Bigfoot can't possibly exist, I would think that, now I personally don't believe in evolution. I believe we came from somewhere. But I would think that these guys would want to run out there and, you know, into the mountains, into the woods, and be like, all right, there's a possibility that this is a the missing link between man and ape. What do you think about that, Ken? Do you think that there is the possibility that this could be a missing link?
Well, the whole notion of a link in itself is a little bit misleading. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, of course, you know, those of us that are behind evolution, you know, we look at certain trends and transformations that are taking place, but this is based on fossil evidence that's very splotchy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, as you know, most of the hominid fossils that have been found, a lot of them are, you know, quite by accident. And, you know, we're actually very fortunate to have any type of fossil remains, you know, to study, because for a fossil to be formed, you have to have, you know, very favorable conditions occur. So, right. But, you know, I think it's fair to say, you know, based on what we know of Bigfoot's behavior, what people have reported and so forth, obviously they walk upright or bipedally like humans. Mm-hmm. There are other animals that can walk bipedally, you know, in certain circumstances, for example, bears, and they look quite clumsy when they're doing it. Other primates like chimps can be trained to walk upright, though it's not mm-hmm. their natural mode of locomotion. So, you know, in that sense, Sasquatch looks very human-like when people see it, because it's walking upright like a man on its hind legs. It's got an arm, you know, pronounced arm swing. It's got a body that's been redesigned for bipedal locomotion, you know, mm-hmm. broad shoulders and, you know, head directly on top of the neck and so forth. And mm-hmm. many people that have seen it up close have described the face, even though it looks very much like an ape because it's shaggy and hairy, it has a face that looks very human-like. At least that's what people have reported. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, there's a good chance that Bigfoot, whatever it is very closely related to humans, as are the other, you know, major primates like, you know, gorillas, orangutans, chimps. So
sure, forth. Sure. Right. Let's talk about the Patterson footage. I'm sure you've answered this question a zillion times in your career. What do you make of that footage?
Well, you know, personally, I think the Patterson footage is the best footage we have. I won't say that it's 100% conclusive, because there still are questions that come up now and again. Mm-hmm. But I'm a very firm believer in that what Patterson did capture was a living Sasquatch. And I base this on a number of things. First of all, I remember my initial reaction or instinct when I first saw the film, as many people have, that there's just something about it, way it moves. I mean, you can actually see muscles moving. You can see, mm-hmm. You know, the hair flow looks very natural. Its behavior mm-hmm. seems, you know, what you might expect from something that was startled by two men riding up and just trying to get out of the picture. It looks very bulky and massive, but in a very natural way. It doesn't look, you know, for example, like a man wearing a, you know, big clunky gorilla suit.
Right.
But moreover, there's been a lot of analysis done on the Patterson film for years and years. And, for example, there are a couple of notable physical anthropologists like Dr. Grover Kranz and Dr. Jeff Meldrum mm-hmm. that have studied the film at length. There are some Russian scientists that spent about 2 years going over the footage carefully. And all of those
people... I think that would be Igor Burtsev, right?
Who was, yeah, one of the Burtsev main guys. And Bayanov, yeah. And there was even a locomotion expert they brought in, a biomechanics expert named Dolskoy. And all of them determined that the movements of the creature were very natural. It was not a human, you know, motion. It was actually, there are a lot of subtle differences between the way a Sasquatch walks and the way humans walk, even though we're both upright walkers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you combine all these elements, you know, and the fact that Patterson made casts of tracks that were left at the spot, those were very convincing. And finally, Bob Gimlin, who I've had the honor and pleasure of speaking with a couple of times, you know, he seems like a very credible person. He's the only survivor. Of course, Patterson passed on in 71. Mm-hmm. He seems like a very credible person, and he'll look you in the eye and tell you that that was not a man in a suit. And in fact, mm-hmm. Gimlin's never really profited from any of that. You know, in fact, he spent years and years sort of in exile trying to avoid any questions and so forth. So, right. Of course, you could interpret that a couple of different ways, too, if he was trying to hide something. But overall, I think the Patterson film is very convincing photographic evidence. And compared to a lot of the footage that we see on YouTube these days where these creatures are peering out from behind bushes or obscured by brush, and, you know, here you have something that's walking right out in the open in the daylight. Right. So, I mean, if they were trying to fake it and get it over, they certainly, you know, it was very cocky of them to kind of stage it in that way. So,
sure.
But unfortunately, it's still controversial all these years later, and it probably always will be.
Probably.
You know what I always thought was interesting about the Patterson-Gimlin film was that this is a female Sasquatch. I mean, you can clearly see the breasts. And the movement is so amazingly just natural. I mean, I'm not trying to sound like a pervert or anything like that, but you know, I've actually heard some people that just from the breasts alone, that this could not be duplicated in a man-made suit. It just the breasts alone, it just moves so natural.
Well, have they not tried to reverse engineer the suit?
Well, that's the thing is, you know, people have attempted to recreate the Patterson film. In fact, some top special effects people from Hollywood have tried to recreate it, and very badly, in my opinion. You know, mm-hmm. So that's another mm-hmm. thing that I think really speaks to the strength of the Patterson film. I mean, this was 1967.
Right.
Costume technology was very primitive in those days. There really wasn't anyone around.
Right.
You know, even John Chambers, who did the Planet of the Apes movies, and he's, you know, been credited with making the suit. He said he didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, personally, I think the costumes in Planet of the Apes in 2001 are pretty laughable by these days' standards. And yeah. The Patterson film, you know, it holds up from that time period, so that's a pretty strong statement. And you're right, Rick, why would someone try to fake the breasts, too? I mean, that's such a subtle detail.
Right.
So well done in the footage, and it could have gone wrong in so many ways, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
You know, again, this just, kind of all adds up to that.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, Ken, I live up here in the Pacific Northwest, and we spend quite a lot of time in the woods because if you, you know, see it on TV, the Pacific Northwest is all woods. Just ask anybody. We're wild, wild west out here. But I do spend quite a bit of time in the woods, and people put game cams up, especially this mm-hmm. time of year. So why is it that, you know, this is supposed to be prime Bigfoot country up here. I'm in Washington State. And why is it that nothing has been captured on game cams?
That's an excellent question, and one of the things that really stump us cryptozoologists and Bigfoot researchers, because we're putting a heck of a lot of cameras out there as well. And, you know, cameras are everywhere now in the woods. You've got these full-blown surveillance systems.
Yeah.
There's really only two ways to counter that, or I guess to answer that question. One is, either these things are so incredibly intelligent and they have some type of instinct or sense that they can, you know, basically hear whatever frequencies or electromagnetic energies or whatever are being put off by these cameras, because they are still electronic devices and there's no way to disguise that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or we're dealing with some type of paranormal phenomenon with Bigfoot, which is, you know, something a lot of Bigfoot researchers don't like to think about. But, you know, the fact that they're conveniently in a location and they just seem to almost vanish.
Right.
And seem to avoid detection. And it's almost like the same phenomenon when you're out ghost hunting or doing UFO investigations and suddenly all the cameras and recorders start malfunctioning, you know.
Right
at the most inopportune moment. So
always, yeah.
But that is an excellent question, and you know, it's very frustrating. I've almost given up on camera traps myself because you know, so many people are doing it and we just haven't gotten any results.
Well, I have heard multidimensional theories where people say, you know, Bigfoot is a multidimensional creature. Do you give any credence to that? Sorry, Rick, didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's all right, because I had the same question. But
you go.
and I get asked that a lot. I think it's possible. You know, okay. And I think as a cryptozoologist or any other type of a researcher, investigator of anomalous events, you have to be open-minded and skeptical, which is the same thing, you know, about all possibilities. It is interesting that a lot of people have reported Bigfoot creatures, you know, with red eye glow, and red eye glow is something that we often associate with the paranormal, and mm-hmm. that runs across the board in, you know, not only Bigfoot, but reports of phantom big cats and creatures like the Mothman and things like that. You know, there are a lot of theories about this, and we can spend hours and hours talking about it, but of course, Charles Fort, John Keel, to some extent, Lauren Coleman and Jerry Clark and a guy named Ted Holliday, a lot of people have discussed this at length, that, you know, they're basically all of these different types of unexplained phenomena, Bigfoot and weird creatures, ghosts and poltergeist activity and spirit phenomena, and UFOs could all be the same thing. You know,
yeah.
Essentially, it's the same mechanism, and it's for whatever reason, and we can't even begin to understand why it does this, because it's an intelligence, and, you know, it's like an ultra-terrestrial intelligence. It mm-hmm. wants to present itself to us in different ways for whatever reasons, you know, and we could only speculate about why that would be. But it's just interesting that you always have these connections. For example, there are certain spooky spots around the country where you will have high incidences of, you know, ghost sightings, UFOs, big cats, Bigfoot, all these things.
The high strangeness.
High strangeness.
Right? Yeah.
High strangeness. You have correlations with different dates and name games, and there are even some people that seem to be more prone or more perceptive to all these different types of phenomena. For example, I meet people that will tell me that they've seen Bigfoot, and then I find out they're a UFO abductee, or, you know, they've... So I mean, you know, and if this is true, then again, one of the theories is that this phenomenon, whatever it is attracted to people, to certain people, and mm-hmm. that it manifests itself at the time and place of its choosing, and that other people that see it may sometimes just be incidentally in the same area. So it's pretty far out stuff, but it is a possibility, I think.
They're asking in the chat room why nobody's ever found Bigfoot bones.
Ah, yes, this is another very, very good question that often comes up. You know, obviously there's the argument out there about decomposition in the woods. And animal remains will typically dissipate very quickly. And the best analogy that's often used is that of bears. You know, bear remains are rarely, rarely ever found in the woods. Why is that? Well, as soon as the bear dies, nature takes over. You have bacteria and insects and parasites and things that eat the flesh right away. Mm-hmm. You have other larger animals that come out and eat the remains and scatter the bones. So many people will, you know, I have friends that have worked as park rangers and bear trackers in Yosemite, and they've told me that they've worked there for years and years and never come across a bear carcass. They just, it's
really
unlikely. Yes. Because
I've come across deer carcasses before, but never a bear carcass.
Yeah, sometimes you'll come across deer carcasses, and I've come across some animal remains in the woods. So I'm saying it's not possible, but again, it's just kind of being in the right place soon enough in the decomposition process. Now, the other thing I can say about that argument is that there have been claims made that bodies have been produced as a result of being shot by hunters or soldiers, mostly in Asia, but perhaps in North America. Mm-hmm. There's a rumor about two Bigfoot creatures that were killed by struck by a bus or a train somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. There was the Minnesota Iceman, which was this weird hominid that was frozen in a block of ice and studied by scientists in 1969 before it mysteriously disappeared. And then there's also the possibility that these Bigfoot creatures are intelligent enough to hide their remains, you know?
Bury their own dead, right?
Bury their own and hide the remains. I mean, other people have claimed that Bigfoot is actually capable of hiding its own tracks, and that they're, you know, adept at avoiding human contact.
Well, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but, you know, I wanted to speak
mm-hmm.
to the intelligence of Bigfoot. I know that the Almas that has been witnessed in China or in, you know, or the Siberian snowman, people have actually seen this creature wearing skins of other animals. So, I mean, if they're capable of wearing skins, then they're certainly capable of burying their own dead.
Well, yeah, certainly. And moreover, I mean, those of us that are Bigfoot researchers have found some very intricate, what we call structures, formations, markers. I mean, there's a number of different terminologies, but essentially these weird things that have been constructed in areas where there have been a lot of Bigfoot reports, and oftentimes they look like little shelters, teepees and huts.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen some really bizarre things that they're manipulating and kind of constructing out there. Now, no one's ever really seen Bigfoot making one of these things, but it's just one of those coincidences that we find them in these areas where there are a lot of reports. But there definitely seems to be an intelligence behind these things, whatever they are, and you know, why these things are constructed. I mean, obviously the shelters make a lot of sense, but the other things, the markers and so forth, perhaps there's some types of, you know, a way of communication. Or, you know, we don't really know.
Okay.
You know, let's. I wanted to move along to another cryptid because I know that this cryptid is, well, it appears to be your personal favorite, and that's the Chupacabra.
Okay.
I don't know
if it's my favorite anymore, honestly, Rick. Gosh, I've been Chupacabra'd out over the last 2 years, to be
honest.
They're
like a dime a dozen right now, aren't they? All those mangy dogs.
They are, and that's the thing I'd like to tell people lately, is these things are popping up, well, at least in terms of the ones that we know of here in Texas, which people have commonly referred to as Chupacabras, although we really, those of us that are researchers are now referring to them as blue dogs, because we know from DNA testing that they're all canids or dogs. Uh-huh. They have this weird hairless blue skin and other abnormalities as well, but people do like to call them chupacabras here in Texas, and they've been linked to possible chupacabra-like killings. But they're popping up everywhere now. I'm getting reports, you know, every few days. People are seeing them, shooting them, running over them, seeing them by the side of the road. There are babies running around, puppies. I mean, they're spreading out from Texas and Oklahoma. So whatever they are, and I personally just like to point out that they're a variation. You know, they're a variation of species. They're related to coyotes and wild dogs and wolves, but they have these weird genetic conditions, or possibly a disease, or a combination of both that makes them look and behave very strangely. But the whole notion that they're blood suckers and blood drinkers, you know, that hasn't been scientifically proven, and it's really not very likely.
Okay. Right. So go ahead, Rick.
No, I was just going to say that from what we know from Puerto Rico concerning the chupacabras, the ones that people claim to call chupacabras in this country are nothing like that. I have family who live in Puerto Rico, and you know, I get stuff from them on Facebook, and they talk about, you know, we had another chupacabra sighting today. Thing walks on 2 feet, it looks like a giant lizard. Obviously, not the same creature. So, with this chupacabra in Puerto Rico. Do you think that this might be some kind of undiscovered lizard species or some kind of alien, or, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, I guess I should have made that distinction at the beginning, since a lot of people aren't familiar with the difference, but you're right. The Puerto Rican chupacabras, which made, you know, world headlines back in the mid 1990s, was basically described as a humanoid type figure standing about 3 to 5 feet tall. Some people said it had hair or fur. Some people said it had reptilian features, very large alien, almost alien type of eyes, a row of spines going down its back. It really didn't look like anything we know in the natural world. And so a lot of, you know, speculation has been made about UFOs and things like that. But in terms of the Puerto Rican chupacabra, I think we definitely have to equate it to the fringe creatures or Goblin Universe creatures that we were talking about. You know, if there are paranormal creatures, and we do, I believe, investigate some of these in cryptozoology, then the Puerto Rican chupacabra is definitely something not of this earth. On the other hand, the Texas chupacabra, which was initially linked to the Puerto Rican chupacabra because of accusations that it was drinking the blood of small animals, which is how the Puerto Rican chupacabra first gained notoriety. And again, this hasn't really been substantiated. There are a couple of intelligent people I've talked to who claim that this was taking place with these animals, but you know, it's a bit of a stretch. So that's and we also have a very strong. I think a lot of it's cultural, because we have a very, you know, the chupacabra you know, started in Latin America and Puerto Rico. It spread quickly to Mexico and South America, and you know, predominantly Latin country or states here in the United States, like Florida and Texas and Arizona. So I think a lot of it is cultural influence, because the Latinos are they're very traditional people.
Right.
You know, they're a little bit more, I would say, open to different types of superstitions and things, alternative, you know, beliefs that, you know, Anglos, for example, traditionally have not been as, you know, interested in. So,
right.
In that sense, the Chupacabra has kind of, I think, received a push from the, you know, from the cultural, how would I put this? Well, essentially, it's kind of like the Bigfoot of Latin culture, I think.
And right.
Just as with Bigfoot, we have different types or subspecies or variations. I think that's what you're seeing with the Chupacabra.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, where I live in Northern Lake County in Illinois, we have a real high Latino population, and it always surprised me that I've never heard stories come out of this area concerning chupacabras. And it's like I ask Hispanic friends, it's like, hey, do you guys know what the chupacabra is? And they're like, oh yeah, you know, we're constantly on the lookout for it or whatever. Never hear anything in Northern Illinois. In fact, Northern Illinois is kind of devoid of cryptids, period.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
What's in Northern Illinois?
Well, let's see, in Northern Illinois, well, just across the border there in Wisconsin, you have, of course, all the Dog Man and Beast of Bray Road in Wisconsin.
Beast of Bray Road, yeah. Reports.
Some of that, I think, spills into Northern Illinois. You've got some, a good deal of Thunderbird reports that I've collected from in and around the Chicago area. You have right there in, you have to pardon my geography, is it Lake Michigan? Yeah, Lake Michigan, I believe, has some lake monster reports. And if you dig deep, you're always going to find something. Monsters are everywhere. They really are. Whether they're urban legends or actual physical animals out there, we get reports from pretty much everywhere in the United States.
Yeah. So we're going to go to break here in a minute. And when we come back, I'm really interested to talk to you about the distinction that you're very clearly, at least to me, making between paranormal origins of some of these creatures and actual physical scientific origins of some of these creatures. Because I find that distinction really interesting. And I think a lot of people don't realize that there is one. So let's go to break. You can stick around for another segment, right, Ken?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. So you're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio, and when we come back, we will be talking more with Ken about cryptozoology. We'll be right back.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at Paranormal UG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Station identification. You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network. Operating frequency on ztalkradio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio. Sorry if that song was a real snoozer. And we are still here with cryptozoologist and the monster hunter and a guy with a really cool hat, Ken Gerhard. Welcome back, Ken.
Hey. Thanks, guys. Once again, it's been a real honor and pleasure to be here tonight, and I'm having fun.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So you seem to me to have been making a really clear distinction between paranormal origins of some of this phenomena and natural origins. So would you sort of talk about that and make that distinction for us so it's crystal clear?
Well, in cryptozoology, we of course we investigate all types of reports and sightings of, you know, mysterious creatures. I guess that's the broad term. Mm-hmm. But we do have certain cryptids, and that's the technical term we use. Certain cryptids that have a lot of physical evidence and probably a lot more of a basis in being a real physical animal that's been undiscovered. And in that category, I would put Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and similar hominids around the world, like the Yeti and Orang Pendek and things like that. Mm-hmm. We also have, you know, of course, lake monsters and sea serpents, things like the Loch Ness Monster and Champ and Ogopogo and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Thunderbirds, things like big black cats, which are reported pretty much all over the world, and so on and so forth. And then we have a second category, and that grouping includes things like the Mothman and the werewolves, or the dogman of Wisconsin in the Midwest, or mm-hmm. the goatman, something that we've investigated down here in Texas, reptile men, things like that that just don't, you know, from a zoological standpoint, they just don't hold any water because there's no, you know, basis to believe that there are humanoid, winged humanoids and things like that, you know, in the natural world.
Right.
So we kind of refer to that as the goblin universe, or I prefer to call them fringe creatures. Now, they are investigated by cryptozoologists because, like it or not, they have been kind of handed to us for investigation. And moreover, in some cases, there could be misidentifications of known creatures. For example, mm-hmm. Mothman, which is definitely sounds like an unworldly creature, you know, there were a number of, you know, big bird reports or thunderbird reports that were happening around that time. At the same time, people reporting this weird winged humanoid. So
right.
were people, in fact, you know, having a misidentification, having a dramatic encounter with this enormous bird, and suddenly the imagination takes off, and they, you know, the adrenaline's pumping, and people tend to have, unfortunately, slightly skewed remembrances of some of these types of encounters because they're so traumatic.
So is that what happens with things like the giant anaconda then, is that it's probably just a really big anaconda, but people remember it as huge like I do with the spider in my laundry room?
Well, absolutely. And like that's a good example. Now, we know anacondas can get to be, you know, over 20 feet long. You know, and I think the longest one in captivity is probably about 20 to 25. Can they get a little bit bigger than that? I mean, reptiles are capable of growing throughout the course of their life. So could you have a 30-foot anaconda? Conceivably, in the wild, it's never been found. Do they get bigger than that? Who knows? You know, I mean, nature is capable of all kinds of amazing things.
Yeah.
What about these photos that you see, you know, like the anaconda with the full-grown man sticking out of its mouth?
I have not seen those.
You haven't seen those. Those are great.
A good thing. I don't like snakes, so.
Yeah, I love snakes personally, but I mean, what do you think about that, Ken? Do you think that that's purely a hoax, or it could actually be something that holds some water?
Oh no, I think that's very likely a real photograph.
Okay,
I mean, I think that photo was analyzed on Monster Quest, and that, you know, the herpetologists and experts they had come on said that it actually looked very natural, that the body was pointed in the right direction. That's always a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there have been truly monstrous snakes that have been reported around the world. Actually, the best evidence for a giant snake is a photograph that was taken over the African Congo. I believe it was in the late 1940s, early 50s, by a Belgian helicopter pilot named Remy mm-hmm. Van Leerden. And he saw this enormous snake on the ground and kind of flew down, and they took a picture of it. And, you know, based on other objects that are in the frame, like trees and so forth, I mean, it's obviously at least a 30 or 40 foot long snake. Now, of course, in Africa, they don't have anacondas, they have pythons.
Right.
It's certainly possible that those really freakishly monstrous snakes are out there somewhere in remote areas.
Yeah. Well, I like to believe that we still live in a very large world, despite all the telecommunications. And, you know, there's still parts of our world that are largely unexplored, and they're always finding something new every single day. And I think it's only a matter of time before we do discover the Orang Pendek or the Sasquatch or the Almas. It's only a matter of time.
Isn't that what happened with, like, the platypus and the giant squid and things like that, that they were thought to be mythological creatures and they actually turned out to be real?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very good, and that's really the foundation for cryptozoology, because there was a period in the 19th century when a French naturalist named Georges Cuvier made the statement that all the major animals had been discovered. There was nothing left to find. Shortly after that, the giant squid was discovered, which was a mythological creature known as the Kraken. In the beginning of the 20th century, there were a whole string of discoveries: the okapi, the mountain gorilla, the Komodo dragon, and then in 1938, the coelacanth was discovered, a fish that had, you know, we thought was extinct for millions and millions of years. And since that time, the process has continued. I mean, there are new animal discoveries now pretty much every year. I mean, large, substantial animals in these remote areas. So going back to Rick's original point, yes, Rick, we live in a gigantic world with huge areas. You know, I think about 50% of the Earth's surface is still wilderness area.
Right.
And if you think about all the jungles and mountain ranges and deserts and tundras and things around the world that people just don't go to, they're just not, you know, they're not hospitable for human habitation, so we don't go there. Well, who's to say, who knows what undiscovered species could still be there?
Right. Well, not to mention, of course, we know more about the surface of Venus than we do know about our own oceans. There could be just about anything floating around out there in Mariana Trench, some of the deepest parts of the ocean that we can never even dream of. Like, of course, the bloop creature.
The bloop?
The bloop creature. You know what I'm talking about, Ken, right?
The bloop?
No,
I'm not
bloop.
Sure I am familiar with the...
No, bloop. That was when they got that sounding off the surface of the ocean floor, and they called it...
Oh, yeah. Sounded like a whale or something, but unidentified.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
Large. So,
okay.
Yeah, it just practically anything out there could...
who knows? You know, even most scientists, conservative scientists, will acknowledge that there could be pretty much anything out in the ocean. We just don't know about it.
So. Great. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the Jersey Pine Barrens for a minute, because that's certainly a part of the world where maybe anything could happen. What do you think about the Jersey Devil?
Wow. Well, Jersey Devil seems to be in the top five. I think if you were to have like a popularity contest with all the cryptids, you know, of course people love Chupacabra, Bigfoot, but the Jersey Devil is a great urban legend. I think like other cryptids, that we're dealing with a case of composite identity. And that means that, you know, they're essentially different types of encounters and things have been kind of lumped together into one identity. You know, most of the Jersey Devil sightings occurred back in the early part of the 20th century, like 1908, there was a real rash of sightings in that area. And what people were describing was essentially this really bizarre, winged, horse-like, humanoid type of creature with all these different attributes and characteristics of different animals. So again, the Jersey Devil, if it exists in that form, is nothing that we would really expect to find in the natural world, so it would be kind of grouped in that goblin universe.
Okay.
Personally, I don't think there's a lot of strong evidence for the Jersey Devil. I mean, there's a lot of evidence that indicated it might have been at the time either a hoax or some type of conspiracy or, you know, a real estate fraud or something along those lines. So, but there's a great legend behind it, and of course people in that area are very proud of it, and proud enough to name hockey teams and things, so I certainly don't want to take the joy out of it. I just don't think, I think of all the cryptids out there, we probably have the least likelihood of finding the Jersey Devil. That's my personal opinion.
Well, and I live down here in the shadow of Mount St. Helens, And Rick even wrote about, didn't you write about Bat Squatch, Rick?
Bat Squatch.
And of course, which is actually a Thunderbird legend. There's, been rumors for years about Thunderbirds up in Mount St. Helens.
I was giggling my mother trucking butt off when I was writing that article of Bat Squatch. That was the most, it's possible that it exists. I don't know. I mean, Ken, you're kind of the expert on this subject. Do you think that there are undiscovered giant bats out there?
Oh, God. I hope not. They'll all get trapped in my hair. Go on. Sorry.
Well, I mean, I don't think in Washington State, but it has been proposed that you could have, more than likely giant bats in parts of Africa and Asia. Mm-hmm. Where you already have some pretty large species of bats anyways. There are two types of bats, of course, the old world bats and the new world bats, Megrochiroptera and Microchiroptera. Mm-hmm. And the bats that we have here in the new world are generally pretty small and tiny.
Oh, no, they're huge. I know. I've had them in my house. Go on. Sorry.
Well, I guess it's all perspective.
Of bats, I'm terrified of bats. I'm afraid they're going to fly out of outhouse toilets and, well, never mind. Go on.
Well, I was referring to, flying foxes and fruit bats, which have a 5-foot wingspan as opposed to if you find a bat with a 1-foot wingspan over here, that's pretty good. But right. There have been sightings and reports, and there are legends around the world, mostly from parts of Asia, Indonesia, and Western Africa, of giant bats. It has also been theorized that some of the chupacabra sightings from South America and parts of Mexico could be giant bats. Yeah. So certainly it's possible.
Like the Ahul is one of them. I know that. That's in Indonesia, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. You got one. That was from the island of Java. Mm-hmm. There's also the Orang Bati. In Africa, it's known as the Oliatu.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of a ambiguity there, because people that describe giant bats oftentimes also describe them as looking very prehistoric and almost reptilian, like a pterodactyl type of thing. And of course, both creatures would have these leathery, membranous types of wings. And in both, species, the wings are, I should say groups rather than species. The wings, of course, are redesigned hands. I don't know if a lot of people realize that about bats and pterosaurs, is that the wings were actually their hands, with extremely extended, little fingers and, this membranous skin that's grown across the hand that enables them to become airborne.
Hmm.
Right.
They're still creepy.
Yeah, I wanted to, touch on the, Thunderbird. The Thunderbird is, we were talking about this during break. It's always been a cryptid that was near and dear to my heart. My grandmother, being Cherokee, used to tell me not to fear the rain and the thunderstorms, because it was the great bird bringing renewal to the earth. And it appears to be a common theme among all Native American tribal people, that there is this gigantic bird that flies through the air. How often do you actually get reports of thunderbirds, Ken?
Well, as far as informal reports, I get them all the time. I go out and do a lot of lectures and public appearances and things like that, and it's quite frequent that someone will pull me off to the side and say, "Hey, you know what? One time I saw this enormous bird. I told my friends and my family, no one will believe me, but this thing was as big as an airplane." Yeah. So I hear that quite a lot off the record. In terms of people posting official reports, I get probably about one every, sometimes one, two, or three a month.
Really?
They come from all over the place, all over the country. And
that's
in fact,
a lot.
I've been investigating recently a number of reports coming out of the North Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas area. So it seems like that area has been very active over the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
But as Rick indicated, the thing about the Thunderbird is it's a very cross-cultural sort of legend or belief all across North America. Every tribe, the Cherokee, Sioux, Cheyenne, Navajo, you name it. Passamaquoddy. I mean, they all had legends about these giant super birds, super eagles, thunderbirds, and they would often, of course, make totems and things to kind of pay homage to them, because they were such revered creatures, spirit beings in a sense. Then again, we have these modern reports that continue, and people are adamant that they've seen these just enormous raptor types of birds, you know, very similar to eagles or vultures, but with a wingspan ranging anywhere from 12, 14 to 20 feet across or more, which is about 5 times to 10 times bigger than any known bird species in North America. Right. Now, that's a real mystery and enigma with regard to the Thunderbirds, because, you know, you would really think that if they were out there, they would be seen a lot more often than they are. But, you know, we perhaps they are, and I think people, because of the ridicule factor, don't talk about it as much. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we just don't spend enough time looking up.
Well, that was kind of the Lawndale here in Illinois with the Lawndale incident back in 1977, when a kid was actually snatched off of his feet by a Thunderbird. From what I understand, that for weeks after their initial report, people were leaving dead birds on their front doorstep, actually nailing dead birds to their front door. It was pretty disgusting. But do you think it's possible, Ken, that what these people are actually seeing a lot of times could be the California condor? Because I know that that's a really large bird.
Oh, yeah. California condors are very bulky, massive birds. They have a wingspan probably about 9 feet across, maybe a little bigger at times. That could certainly be what some people are seeing when they're reporting these Thunderbirds. Now, back in the day, and by that I mean probably hundreds or thousands of years ago, there were condors all across North America. And unfortunately, like many animal species, they were, you know, hunted to the brink of extinction. And now really the only condor populations we know of are in California and Arizona.
Right.
But it is theoretically possible that you could have perhaps a meandering condor that's lost its way, and you know, that this is what people are reporting from time to time. The birds that Marlon Lowe described certainly resembled condors in terms of having the white ruffly feathers around their neck and the bald head and so forth. So,
I have a question, and it may seem like it's going to come out of left field. So, I wonder about cattle mutilations. Has there ever been any discussion that is of cryptozoological origin?
Well, there's been speculation that there could be a creature out there, something that's killing these animals. But I think if you look at the way these cattle and other livestock mutilations take place, you know, there seems to be a surgical precision there. The eyes and other vital organs being removed in a surgical way that would really not jive well with, you know, a predator. I mean, predators are very opportunistic eaters. You know, they're going to grab, you know, typically they will go for soft tissues first because they're easier to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's a pack of animals, they may want to tear off a piece and kind of make off with whatever they can get off with. But I don't think there's really been a very strong link that's ever been drawn between cryptozoology and cattle mutilations, although I do find that to be a fascinating subject. And for whatever reason, it's really been grouped more in the study of ufology. And also there have been accusations that it could be some type of religious cult or government conspiracy. And, you know, there's really all types of theories out there. But going back to what we were talking about a little while ago about, you know, all of these different things being related, with the big bird that I, you know, wrote a book about and investigated here in South Texas, there actually were a number of cattle mutilations going on and making the newspapers at the time that people were reporting the big birds.
Really?
And at the same time, there were a number of UFO reports taking place as well. So, you know, you can infer whatever you want from all that, but it's just another piece of circumstantial evidence that there could be relationships between these different unexplained anomalous occurrences that we just don't understand.
Well, back in the 1970s, here in Northern Illinois, in the town of Antioch, there was an ongoing case of high strangeness, and my uncle was actually friends with one of the kids from the families who was experiencing this. They were, you know, at first it started out with them seeing bright lights in the sky, and then they started having poltergeist phenomenon in their house, and then they were having large creatures scratching on the side of their homes and leaving, you know, punch marks and, you know, all sorts of stuff. So it's, I think that there might be something to these creatures being some kind of interdimensional, considering the fact now when you have, you know, theoretical physics, you know, string theory or whatever, you know, it's, they're now saying that there are hundreds of dimensions out there and anything could, if it had the right kind of technology, could find its way through.
So, well, not hundreds, but at least 11.
Well, at least 11.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Sorry.
Sorry. Well, you know, not, I'm the quantum not, physics chick. Sorry.
Yeah, and physics also relates to philosophy in some ways. And if you think about the writings of Carl Jung, you know, Jungian theory that everything in the universe is connected in perhaps an intricate, you know, weave that we just don't, as humans, understand or can conceive of.
Mm-hmm.
But I would certainly believe that. I was involved in an investigation about 2 years ago that involved poltergeists and Bigfoot activity at the same location at this really creepy place out in the country. So,
mm-hmm. Really? How'd we that never play really out? Found it.
I'm sorry?
I said, how'd that play out? Yeah.
I think we came away, all of us just kind of scratching our heads, and I don't think there's really been anything recent on that. But essentially, there were these people living in an area where there had been a lot of Bigfoot activity in history. But they were reporting, banging noises around their property, bad smells and screaming noises, which all of that stuff certainly fits with Bigfoot activity. But then there were some other things going on, you know, objects levitating and moving around inside their property as well. So, that was kind of one of those weird cases where you saw kind of this, you know, cross hybridization of these different weird unexplained events.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Interesting. Wow. Well, you know, I have never really known a lot about cryptids other than, you know, the legends that we have up here in the Pacific Northwest. One of the ones that that I came across when I was reading a book called Weird Washington is tree octopuses. You heard of that one before?
The what octopus? The tree octopus?
The tree octopus.
No, I'm afraid I missed that one, Karen. Do you want to expound, or?
I just, you know, I read it at the time, and I totally dismissed it because I thought, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Well, there's also the furred trout.
The furred trout.
I don't know if you heard about that. A lot of people tell me about that. Oh, no, they're real. I've seen them. You know, it's like, well, I think that's more of a taxidermist with a sense of humor.
That's like the jackalope, then, is what you're talking
jackalope.
About.
Yeah, the furry trout, the jackalope. A lot of these things are kind of... You know, they've been embraced by our culture and built up into these really cool urban legends. And, you know, we need that as humans. We need some cool mysteries and legends and just kind of quirky beliefs kind of mixed in with our everyday mundane lives, I think.
Yeah.
Sure. So what is the strangest thing in your travels that you've experienced then that you've come across?
Oh, wow. That's a tough question. I've been very fortunate to come across a lot of weird things. I've never had a visual sighting of a cryptid, and that's, you know, one of the first things people have asked me, because a lot of the notable Bigfoot researchers that I work with were just, you know, basically normal people that had this amazing Bigfoot encounter, and then it changed their life, and they suddenly became obsessed with proving it was real. But I never had that experience. I've had some pretty scary experiences. If we're talking about Bigfoot vocalizations or cries and sounds, I've been in some areas doing research at night and heard some really hair-raising noises that, to me, sounded very much like primates or something massive, whatever they were, and very similar to other Bigfoot vocalizations that have been recorded around the country. Those, you know, when you hear something like that, and of course, as an outdoorsman and wildlife researcher, I'm very familiar with all the different sounds that can, you know, emanate in the woods at night, and there are some weird ones.
Animals can make noises.
Animals can make noises that you would never think they're capable of making when they're in distress and whatever. But no, I've definitely heard primate noises in North Texas, for example, in one location. And the closest thing I could compare it to would be howler monkeys, which I've heard when I was down in Central America. It's almost identical. So. That's probably the weirdest. One other time, this is interesting. One time I was at a location in Ohio investigating Bigfoot reports, and we actually, my associate and I, saw a UFO pass overhead, and that was the only UFO sighting I've ever had. And it was, I don't mean just like a little flashing light in the sky. I mean, it was basically a diamond-shaped, huge diamond-shaped object, completely silent, with these weird colored flashing lights, and it passed right over our heads at this
lake.
Yeah, and
very, very.
So that,
cool.
I mean, that kind of goes back to what we were talking. The recurring theme of this show is tonight, which is, are there relationships? You know, why are we at this lake looking for Bigfoot, and then all of a sudden a UFO flies over our head, and incidentally, my camera began to melt as well. So that was pretty creepy, and I think UFOs definitely creep me out more than Bigfoot. So
how about ghosts? How do you feel about ghost research?
I'm fascinated by it. Mm-hmm. I think there's undoubtedly there's something there. I mean, people have been experiencing spirit and ghost phenomenon for centuries and documenting it for centuries, if not thousands of years.
Right.
I tend to approach all these things very skeptically because, and more so I think with paranormal activity, because I think it touches people on a very spiritual level.
It does.
Talking about, there's an emotional attachment to the subject matter with spirit phenomenon that, and as researchers, we really owe it, to the field to try to detach ourselves and separate ourselves from those types of emotions and preconceptions when we're out investigating. Otherwise, you're going to get into situations where people, their adrenaline gets pumping, they're in a creepy, dark hospital or what have you, where there's been all this, we're as humans, we're able to trick ourselves quite easily, I find.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that there isn't something there, but I think people are just a little bit too quick, to jump the gun sometimes because, they convince themselves that they've seen or heard or experienced something, and maybe it just gets blown a little bit out of proportion. On the other hand, I've heard some pretty darn good EVPs, and I've seen some pretty miraculous photographs and films that I just can't make any sense of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is definitely some good evidence out there as well.
I have an EVP that somebody actually suggested was Bigfoot, to tell you the truth. It's at a place up in the Cascade Mountains, and I could have sworn, I thought it was an owl when I first heard it, except it actually was enunciating whoop, whoop, whoop. And it's a really interesting EVP, and it certainly has made me wonder, because it was something, of course, that we didn't hear at the time, and so you just never know.
but that is primarily a primate thing, right, Ken?
That is, and that's one of the most common sounds that are recorded or reported to be Bigfoot vocalizations, are these whooping sounds.
I should send this to you.
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, maybe I should send it to you, because we were just walking down a trail in the mountains, and I had a recorder just sticking out of my front pocket, and this thing was right up against the recorder, and we didn't hear anything. So, it says whoop.
So, well, that's probably spirit activity then.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I don't know. I've never been able to figure it out. It's one of the most bizarre things I've ever captured on recorder. That's for sure.
Or wrap your mind around this. What if it's a Bigfoot EVP?
You just blew my mind.
Wow.
Do they have ghosts?
It's a flashback right now.
A Bigfoot ghost? Oh, my God. It's the ghost of Bigfoot in the Cascade Mountains. That's my next...
Well, I mean, anything's possible, right? We know they've been there for hundreds of years, so if they have spirits, I don't know.
Yeah, sure. So Ken, it's about time to wrap up, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to share any links, books, websites, anything where people could go to learn more about you and get more of your interesting brand of science, because I certainly find cryptozoology fascinating. It's very different than anything else we do in the paranormal, in my opinion.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, yes, it's definitely a hot topic, and people are very interested in all this kind of stuff right now, whether it be ghosts, UFOs, or cryptozoology is kind of the new rage. So it's fascinating material. I'm afraid that my website's taken a bit of a crash lately, and I have to take responsibility for a large part of that because I'm just too busy to maintain it. But people can get in touch with me on Facebook and MySpace, but I have a new book out, and it's called Monsters of Texas. It was co-authored, actually, with Nick Redfern, who's a good friend of mine and a great author of all.
Oh, isn't he the Celestine Prophecy guy? Isn't that who Nick Redfern is? Did he write, like, the Celestine Prophecy or something? No, that was James Redfield. Never mind.
No, Nick's written a number of good books about UFO conspiracies, cryptozoology, and
I've read some of his, too. Yeah, okay.
But he and I both live here in Texas, and we worked for about 4 years together compiling this book, and it's got everything in there. We talk about the Texas Chupacabra, big birds, Bigfoot, lake monsters, big cats. I mean, it's really, and we even talk about some of the weirder kind of urban legend type of things, like the Donkey Lady, which we have here in San Antonio, the Goat Man, Lake Worth, and so forth.
Is there actually a Donkey Lady? Is it like a lady with big teeth, or?
I thought that was in Tijuana, dude.
No, that's the dog show. Cheryl's back. We're not supposed to do that now.
Well, just come on, Rick. Mind out of the gutter, brother. No, Donkey Lady is kind of an anthropomorphic human / donkey creature that haunts, you know, this spooky deserted bridge at night here in San Antonio.
Seriously?
And if you go around the country, you have similar legends about the Bunny Man in Virginia and the Pig Man of Maryland and the Goat Man, and for some reason people love these urban legends, and they always seem to be concentrated around bridges or railroad tracks and Lover's Lane type areas. So it's probably more of an urban legend, but it's a lot of fun. But anyways, Monsters of Texas, and it's available on Amazon, and you know, all major online book retailers should have that.
Cool. Look forward to reading that. I'll have to pick up a copy. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on, and look
thank
forward to
much,
hearing
Kat.
More from you. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again sometime.
Absolutely. I had a great time, and thanks again for having me, Rick and Karen. Hopefully we will talk to you again real soon.
Great. Right. Okay, so this is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio, and we will be back in just a few minutes with Mindy Kinnaman, who's going to be talking about, oh my gosh, what movie is it, Rick? I forgot.
Hereafter.
Hereafter. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Paul McCartney on behalf of Rad. If you're drinking, you can't drive my car or any car. And remember, don't drink and drive. It's just not worth it.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Thank you. You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Let's talk to Gats.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio.
This is Cheryl.
Cheryl has fired both of us. She's not
I'm taking
us talk
over.
Anymore.
Yeah. No, don't leave the chat room. Don't leave the radio show. Rick and Karen are still here.
Yeah, we're still here.
Thank goodness. I am just on because we have a caller on the line from the chat room. It's Gots Anime Fever, and we're going to talk to them for a couple minutes before we go to Mindy's review on Hereafter. And Rick, you have a couple questions from one of our chat regulars, don't you?
Yeah, actually, I do. You know, Gots, we see you in the chat room pretty much every week. You know, what exactly is it that you know, like about the show?
It's Karen.
I like the fact that there's unknown out there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? So, have you done any investigating of the paranormal yourself, or are you just sort of exploring what's out there right now?
I'm just exploring what's out there right now.
Very cool. Very cool.
How long have you been interested in the paranormal, Gots?
Since I was 13. Scariest Places on Earth came on.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever been any place haunted? Or seen a UFO or had any kind of paranormal experience?
Castile de San Marcos.
Okay. And did anything happen while you were there?
Besides an unusual tension headache then when I was like 6 years old, but that was like it.
Yeah, I get that all the time, actually.
Yeah, I actually know people who, when they go haunted places, that's what happens is they get headaches. I just get them all the time, probably because I have teenagers and dogs. Oh, sorry.
That was in that French soldier section where they had those bunk beds and the uniforms and the personal effects.
Got it. Very cool. Very cool.
So what show have you liked to date so far?
Besides ours, which is the best. Go on.
Well, no. What I mean is, you know, with our show, which has been your favorite so far?
The Skeptical Ghost Hunter.
On TikTok? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I have to admit, I have not had a lot of time to listen to other Z-Talk shows. Is a Skeptical Ghost Hunter really, really skeptical, or just kind of skeptical?
Oh, right now they're thinking about changing his name to that. Almost There? Because of his experiences from when he went on an investigation?
Got it.
Hmm.
Well, go ahead, Rick. Sorry.
I was just going to say, well, what about with, you know, our show? Is there a guest that you've liked, you know, more than others, or, you know?
Or perhaps a host that you like better than the other host, like the female host.
Or the male host, Gots.
No.
That's a hard question for me.
Maybe Gots likes the producer better.
No, nobody likes the producer. She's a stick in the mud. Oh!
All right, I'm muting again.
you don't have to answer that. It's just fine. Hey, thanks for calling in, Gots. We need to get to Mindy, who's waiting to tell us about what's the movie again?
Come on, Karen, it's Hereafter.
Hereafter.
See, this is why my name is first.
It's because I'm old and you're not. That's what it is. I have these geezer brain farts, and that was definitely
short-term memory loss.
That's right. Okay, so Mindy,
yes,
you're here to talk to us about the movie Ever After. No, I'm kidding.
Oh my God, Karen, it's Hereafter.
I totally know that, dude.
Yes, I am.
All right, let's hear what you got to say.
Well, I have to laugh because, to be quite honest, I did not hear of this film until I got my email from my local art house theater saying this new movie's coming out. And I'm like, oh, Matt Damon has a new movie? Oh, it's directed by Clint Eastwood? Oh, it's about, like, the afterlife? Never heard of it. And I really hadn't seen much about it, so I didn't know. And read the plot synopsis and thought, okay, well, I'll go. And the plot is... There are three people in various points of their life. There's a French journalist who survives the tsunami that hit Southeast Asia back in 2005. And she survives it, but in the process actually is temporarily killed, and so she experiences the afterlife. And then you've got a young schoolboy whose twin brother is killed, and so he's struggling to cope with his brother's death. And then you've got the Matt Damon character, who is a reluctant psychic. He has the gift, used to have his own company, but just found it unbearable to cope with, so decides to quit his job and go to work at a factory. And it's just the three of them and their lives trying to deal with each of their personal experiences. And the destiny actually brings all three of them together. And it's just really kind of neat how that whole process works and unfolds on the screen. So it was a pretty interesting movie. Besides Matt Damon, there's really only a few names that you would probably know. You've got Jay Moore and Bryce Dallas Howard. And then there's a couple other faces you might recognize. But really, it's a largely unknown cast because it's set in three different countries. It's set in San Francisco in the United States, and London, England, and then Paris, France. So it's kind of neat. And it focuses on each person's story and then brings them all together at the end.
Oh, cool. So it's like, it's a series of vignettes, kind of.
Yeah, well, yes and no. Like, it'll tell a little bit of one person's story and then cut to the next. So in a way, yes.
Okay.
Clint Eastwood actually based it on old Parisian films that told stories in this manner, mm-hmm. which was, and so it was kind of neat to watch it, although the impatient part of me was just like, get to so-and-so's story. I want to know what's going on next.
So I have a confession to make. Anytime I hear Matt Damon's name.
Yes, I do too.
Matt Damon.
I do too.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about Team America World Police, the best movie with the best puppet sex scene ever.
Matt Damon.
The best and longest.
Yeah,
he actually does a really good job in this film. And actually, the person who I really liked the most was French journalist, and I probably am not going to say her name right because I don't speak French, Cicely de France. She did a tremendous job, and I really liked her character mm-hmm. and just really felt drawn to that story and just wanting to see where it went and everything. And then I really also did like the boys' experience. And I think why I appreciated their story so much is because those two characters were actually touched by real incidents. Like, she was involved in the tsunami, and then the boy nearly ended up on one of the London tube trains that was involved in the terrorist plot on July 7th of 2007. So I liked how they brought in real-life events to push their stories forward.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like another one that needs to go on my list to see. I think that I can keep myself from screaming out Matt Damon in the theater. I think I can do it. So, yeah, I still haven't seen the one that you came on and talked about last time. And of course, now I've completely even forgotten what it was. But you said that you, in the middle of the movie, went no or something like that.
Oh, Devil, where I screamed like a little girl. Yes.
Yes, Devil. I haven't seen that yet either, but that's that's probably not even in theaters anymore. Now I'm going to have to watch it when it comes out on demand or something.
How about Paranormal Activity 2? Have you seen that yet?
No, I don't really want to because I didn't like part one. Oh. I found part one to be anticlimactic because I figured out the pattern. Mm-hmm. And so by the time it got to the end, I was actually really quite bored. So
Figured out the pattern. What was the pattern?
Well, everything happens at night, of course.
Oh, well, yeah.
It always started with something happening with the door, and it's like, oh boy, here we go again. And I think they could have done their scares a little differently, and there were just some things about it that I personally did not believe or buy, so that's why I had a hard time with it.
Yeah, what I liked about that movie was the one camera. I thought that the use of the one camera was really very well done. So I liked it from a technical standpoint, but the rest of it, not so much.
I think that I'm probably the only paranormal researcher in the world who actually liked this movie.
Really?
No, I know people who do.
Oh, okay. Because I just watched it last night when I was at work. I love this movie. I don't know why. I just do.
Yeah, my sister really loves it. And then I have quite a few friends who really enjoy it as well. I just personally, it didn't do anything for me.
Okay, well, so did you watch any movies for Halloween?
Oh, I've watched lots. We actually did quite a few on our show. And actually, the other night I watched Hatchet, which is just a fun, gross-out horror movie by Adam Green. It's hilarious. It's one of those, like, gore-fest kind of films. Like, all of the deaths in the film are completely over the top, but they're so funny in their execution that you can't watch it without giggling.
Kind of like watching Bad Taste.
Yeah, or even Brain Dead.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one, too, definitely.
I really love that one, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know any of these movies because, as you both know, I never go see movies.
Well, those are actually, Bad Taste and Brain Dead are both very, very old films by Peter Jackson.
Yeah, very, very, very independent.
Okay. Are they zombie films?
Brain Dead. No.
Yeah, Brain Dead is, but Bad Taste is kind of like an alien invasion. You know, what would happen if aliens decided to invade, what was it, New Zealand?
Yeah.
So, actually, you can watch Bad Taste on YouTube. You go into, like, their movie section, you can watch it there. It's pretty funny.
YouTube has a movie section?
Yeah, YouTube has a movie section. They got comedy, horror, everything you could possibly think of, yeah.
I can watch it on Netflix, too.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. So, hey, Mindy.
Yes?
I know you just... can't wait to come on so that you can do the lightning round. Yep, for one tonight.
Sure,
we're one down on the lightning round because Chad's not with us, but Cheryl, you can mic on, right?
I can.
All righty. Okay, and poor Mindy, she didn't get the questions in advance unless Cheryl sent them to her.
I did not.
Sorry. All righty. So the first one is actually something we've talked about a few times on the show already tonight, and we talked about with Ken, and that's that Mike Green, the former fraud investigator, captured the Bigfoot footage in North Carolina last year. And what he did is he used a thermal game camera and a candy bar. He lured Bigfoot out. So what I wanted to know is, would you be more likely to believe someone who's a former fraud investigator claiming that they saw this than somebody who was just a normal person, Mindy?
No, because I would think you would have some pretty good ideas for how to cheat the system. Plus, if all it took was a thermal camera and a candy bar, why have I not found my own?
Yeah, I know. Rick, I'm sorry, can you go ahead with your answer? My son is here, and apparently it's something important. So,
okay.
I'm going to mute, and then Cheryl, you'd go after Rick, and I'll be right back. Sorry.
Okay.
All right, cool. No, I was going to say the same exact thing as Mindy. I think that this is a person... who is, he knows how to fake things only because of going, you know, investigating frauds for, you know, God only knows how long. So, no, I'm not buying it.
Okay. You know what's funny is I had the same initial thought that both you and Mindy had, but then I watched the video and I was thinking about it. Would someone like that want to ruin their reputation? And I don't think that they would. And I actually think I might give them a bit more, give their word a bit more weight than maybe the average Joe, just because they, well, supposedly would know how to analyze their data or what have you, their video, their audio a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. So there's a 35-year-old woman, and she suffers from a form of narcolepsy. And what it does is that it causes her to collapse every time she laughs, gets scared, or is surprised. So here's what I want to know. If I had this condition, would you ever tire of telling jokes or jumping out of closets in front of me? And then I have a follow-up question to that, and that is, what's your most embarrassing story about something or someone that scared or surprised you, Mindy?
Well, that actually answers both questions. Because I have this really... If you scare me just right, my knees give out. And,
really?
Like, I hit the deck.
So you collapse? Oh, yeah.
Yes. I don't pass out or anything, but yeah, my knees give out and I hit the ground. It's only happened 3 times so far, but it has set up a dare for my sister. And that is her new goal in life, is to scare me so bad that my knees give out in front of her because she did not witness any of the. So she's tried some pretty creative stuff. None have worked. My favorite was the one where she pretended to leave something in my car, and my mom was supposed to hide in my back seat, and then as I got in the car, jump out and scare me. But she couldn't get in my car, so she was just crouched down next to it. And, yeah.
How do you not chip your teeth?
I have no idea.
Do you wear a mouth guard all the time? Or
well, and the funny thing is the stuff that has scared me so bad are, like, they're not even, like, the one time I was sitting in my room in college and I could hear something out in the living room of our apartment, and as I opened the door started opening toward me, and I just dropped to the ground. And my roommates were like, so if we were killers, you'd be dead now because we would have stabbed you to death. But it's stuff like that where it's just so completely silly, but it actually works.
I really shouldn't laugh at that. That's really an unfortunate condition that you have.
I think it's hysterical. But I'm so accident prone that I've learned to laugh off all of this stuff, so that's why I find it so funny.
Okay. All right. So, Rick?
It would never get old with me. I would do it all the time. I would jump out at you naked if I had to, just to get a laugh or a scream or whatever. But the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me was when I was working night security at the mall,
Rick Hale, mall cop.
Well, yeah, that was years and years ago. But one of the supervisors actually jumped out in front of me and the other guy, and the other guy that I was walking with punched him right in the face and broke his nose.
Oh, I bet he never did that again.
Never did it again. But the guy was kind of a douchebag, so he deserved it. So, on to the next.
Oh, I actually did have somebody. You triggered a memory. I used to work at a chiropractic office many, many years ago, and was walking down the hall before we had any patients in the office, and the massage therapist jumped out of the back, the x-ray room, totally naked.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was certainly one of the most surprising things that's ever happened to me.
With big old 70s bush.
Rick, all right. I needed that imagery, thanks.
Woo! Oh, yes, wow. It was the 70s throw. Little pig sticking out of it. Sorry. All right. Cheryl.
Oh, man. We're disturbed around here anyway, and so we scare each other at least 10 times a day. And the trick is, though, that you have to kind of stand back when you're scaring Chad because he has that fight reflex where he'll just punch you, you know? Mm-hmm. He'll just respond by just jabbing, you know, choo-choo-choo. So I've learned to keep my distance while scaring. But yeah, I mean, probably just yesterday when we were walking up the stairs to come inside, and Chad was like a few feet in front of me, and he ducked around the corner. Well, you think I would think something was up, but he totally like scared the crap out of me, and like I wasn't expecting it, and he was like a couple feet in front of me. So it's kind of embarrassing when, you know, they're right there. Yeah. I don't know.
I actually, Tanner and I, when he was younger, used to, because Jim sometimes works nights. And so when he's at work at night, Tanner would be a little freaked out when he was younger because, you know, the man of the house wasn't home. And apparently I'm not, you know, nearly as tough. And so we would take turns jumping out and scaring each other.
I don't know. The way you talk about carrying your guns and stuff out there in the wood, Karen, I would not want to jump out in front of you.
My guns are locked up in a safe.
Mm-hmm.
They are. They're locked up in a safe right now. We have kids in the house. We keep them locked up. We do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although I have to tell you, I just totally am going off subject. Sorry. I wished today when I went to Safeway that I had my gun in my car. I had the scariest, weirdest thing happen. Mm. I was pulling out. We were in the parking lot waiting to make a left turn onto the main street that runs out front of Safeway. And it was about 5:00 in the afternoon. So there was a lot of traffic. And there was this guy who was walking along the sidewalk, and I thought he was either going to go around the front of the car or go around the back of the car. And instead, he walked up to Tanner's window and leaned down and stared in, and I just floored it and took off. It was
friggin' weird.
It was just totally creepy. Anyway, my story is that I jumped out, scared Tanner. He screamed. And we nice. Never did it again because the look on his face was so pitiful.
You scarred him for life, Karen.
Aww.
For life.
I know. I never did it again. So, okay. Next question. So, new research shows that people with higher IQs tend to be more active at night, and so they go to bed later, while those with lower IQs go to bed early. So here's what I want to know. What time do you go to bed, Mindy?
Well, is it actually climb into bed or fall asleep? Because if it's fall asleep, it's sometime after 1.
Okay, well, okay, that's... Mm-hmm. I would put you at about 120. Rick, what time do you go to bed? You work night.
Yeah, I work overnight, so I'm on totally opposite thing, but, you know, so I can't... I really don't have an answer for that.
247. Cheryl, what time do you go to bed?
Well, if this theory is true, I think I'm a genius, because I never go to bed.
And me, I'm like usually passed out by 11 o'clock, which means that I have an IQ of approximately 6.
11? Karen, are you exaggerating a little bit?
11?
I'm thinking so more like 9.
No, well, I start reading at about 9. Okay.
I'm going to go 8:52.
Well, did you hear what I said? I said my IQ is 6, people. Jeez.
And again, that's why I'm first. I have
I lost the election. I know. I get it. I lost the election. Rick won. I am the second host. I am not the star of the show. It's Rick Hale.
I am not the star of the... Don't even go there. Don't even start with that. All right, moving right along. Next question.
Moving on. So, there was a guy named Dr. Duncan McDougall. Have you heard of this guy? He did experiments back in 1907 to determine the weight of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did is he placed a volunteer who was near death on a scale. And when the moment the person died, the scale dropped by 3/4 of an ounce. Mm-hmm. And he did it with a couple of people, and he found similar kind of weight fluctuations by about between 1/2 to 3/4 of an ounce for the other two people as well. So he then went on to try to prove his hypothesis by doing it with dogs. No, weighing dogs as they were dying, not doing it with dogs. Sorry, that is just anyway, so when the dogs died, there was no change in weight. And Dr. McDougall felt that this confirmed his hypothesis because dogs had no souls. So here's my question for you. That clearly to me is a case of confirmation bias working. How do you think that paranormal researchers can avoid falling prey to something like that, to confirmation bias, Mindy?
Ooh, that's a good question. Can I come back to that one?
Yeah, we'll come back to you. Well, Rick, we'll start with Rick. And then you can say what Rick said, because he has a 265 genius and he won the election. Okay, so Rick, what do you think?
Well, with weighing the human body after it's dead, usually there's something, don't we like poop and pee out everything that's inside of us right when we die?
Yeah, but they were all still on the scale, so all that stuff would have stayed right there with them.
Okay, all right, well, that's fine. No, with the confirmation bias, I don't think so. It's very difficult for us socially to maintain our objectivity. We can try as we might, saying, oh, yes, I'm skeptical and everything, but when it comes down to it, our beliefs are always going to get, our personal beliefs and biases are always going to get in the way.
Yeah, I actually sort of agree with you on that. Cheryl, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's real hard to eliminate confirmation bias, but I think it's important to keep an open mind to all possibilities and try and come at it from a standpoint of examination and, you know, try and look at all different angles. I mean, that's really all I can say.
Yeah. So, Mindy, you got anything?
Yeah, and I would think that one thing that could help with that is make sure that your research team, because usually there's more than one person involved, is diverse in their thought, because that can help eliminate some of that bias.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's very easy to fall prey to getting the results that you want out of something. So you really do have to have a very clear mindset, and I think having somebody else there helps initiate those checks and balances that are needed to keep it unbiased.
Okay, cool. Okay, so there's a cardiac surgeon in the UK named Dr. Sam Parnia, and he's been conducting research into near-death experiences for years. And one of the experiments that he does is he places images way above the patient's head, like near the ceiling, so if they leave their body and hover, they can see the images. and tell them what they saw. And if they see the images, then clearly that shows that something's going on. So what I want to know is what you actually think is the cause of near-death experiences, Mindy.
Well, my grandfather always told us growing up that he had had several because he had multiple heart attacks and had gone through several bypass surgeries. And so there's a part of me that thinks that, but then there is that part of me that I've heard the argument that it's just your brain, you know, flashing images of right. your loved ones or whatever. But I don't know how I could explain them seeing a picture unless for whatever reason, maybe they're not under all the way, with their anesthetic.
Yeah. But the picture is, would have like the bottom underneath the bottom of it to them. And the only way they'd be able to see it is if they floated above it.
I'm thinking projection image. So I'm like,
Oh no.
So it's on the floor, right, Karen? Not on the ceiling. You mean
it would be on the floor. Like near the ceiling, but facing away from the patient. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, Rick, what do you think is the cause of near-death experiences?
Well, even after the moment of death, there's still some brainwave activity. You still have synapses that are firing and electrical impulses and all that going through your brain. I think that what that actually is that your brain, even before you're brought back, you're still collecting data. Our brains are an amazing computer. And I think that's what it is. The jury's still out with me on, OBE or out of body experiences and near death experiences. So that's the only thing I can think of.
Sure, fair enough. What do you think, Cheryl?
Yeah, I think it's a state between life and death, and that it's definitely. I think that people report lend credence that it can't just be brushed off, that there's something to it.
Okay. Cool. So this next one is really cool. Scientists at St. Andrews University in Scotland think that they have made a breakthrough in cloaking technology. And
yes.
Within the next few years, they think they're going to be able to create an invisibility cloak, dudes. So what do you
think? That's awesome.
What Harry Potter-ish invention would you like to see come to fruition, and how would you use it, Mindy?
Ooh. You know, today I was walking around my work and I actually thought that it would be really sweet to have the Polyjuice potion.
Oh, yeah.
Which, for those of you who don't know Harry Potter as well as I do, it's the one where you take it and it has a little piece of the person you want to be, and then you can become that person for like an hour or so.
Right.
Just thought that was fun.
Yeah, cool. Okay, Rick, how about you?
You know, I'm going to go with the same thing I say about Twilight. I'm a 36-year-old guy, and I know nothing about Harry Potter. So,
all right.
Sorry, Karen.
All right, moving on, Cheryl.
Well, I think a flying broom would be totally cool. I mean, the invisibility cloak would be the best, but then next, flying broom.
Okay, cool. And I would assume you would fly on it.
Definitely.
You know, I would use it to sweep the kitchen floor without me touching it, so I could sit and do my nails or something. But, you know, that's just me. Okay, last question. So this question is, in my opinion, the absolute definition of irony. A Lincoln, Nebraska man was dressed up as a breathalyzer for Halloween. Can you tell where I'm going with this yet?
Mm-hmm.
He was pulled over and he failed a breathalyzer. So I want to know what the most ironic situation is that you've ever found yourself in, Mindy.
I don't know if I can think of ironic situations other than, you know, foot and mouth situations where I talk about how completely hot somebody is and he's standing right behind me.
Yeah, that happens.
I actually did that to one of my students today.
Wait,
he was talking about his top three women, and I said, oh, so-and-so, not realizing she's standing right behind us.
Oh, well. So, Rick, how about you?
Being told by several doctors that my wife and I would never get pregnant, and then on that same day find out she is pregnant.
Yeah, that's ironic, but in a good way.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Okay, Cheryl?
Oh, probably that one time I had one hand in my pocket and the other one was given the peace sign. That was pretty ironic.
What was the hand? Never mind. Okay, so on the next week's show, we are going to be talking to West Coast Ghost Hunters, right? right, Cheryl?
That is correct. We're going to be talking with John Collins from West and East Coast Ghost Centers.
Awesome.
That's, yeah, definitely. And if you want to check out the site in advance of that, it's westcoastghosthunters.com. And coming up after our show is going to be Night Views Radio. And so if you want to stick around and listen to that, that'd be great. And
now does John Collins have like any like West Coast and East Coast rapper kind of thing going on with that?
You can ask him next week.
Right? You'll have to ask him that stuff. That's actually West Coast Ghost Hunters is who I'm headed down to Oregon to do that investigation.
Hey Karen, isn't there going to be a UK Ghost Hunters group as well connected to those two?
We will have to ask John Collins that question.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, and oh, also here's really big exciting news is Bert and I are going to be on CBS Radio in Seattle on Tuesday morning. Bert Coates and I are. We're going to be talking about Wellington, and we've created a new Wellington site for anybody who's interested. It's called wellingtonproject.org, so go there. And we have a magazine coming out anytime soon, Cheryl?
We do, yeah. Early next week, we'll have our November issue, so check it out at paranormalunderground.net in a few days.
All right, and until then, we'll be, you know, there's blogs, there's galleries, there's all sorts of cool stuff, so stop by the site, and we'll see you next week on Paranormal Underground Radio when I will be back on top, and Rick will be the second name. It's going to happen.
Have a good night.
Thanks, good everyone. Night.
Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.